Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Oswego County Sheriff Rule Todd. He recently joined a lawsuit filed by the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association challenging the New York SAFE Act. Sheriff Todd has held the office since 1999. Sheriff Todd, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's start with the lawsuit I just mentioned. Can you briefly give me the gist of the constitutionality claim that's being made there?
The Constitution, as we understand it and as the way I've always been led to believe, gives us the right to bear arms. The ordinary citizen, I'm not talking just law enforcement, but the ordinary citizen, having not been convicted of a crime or for a reason of mental illness, having the ability to possess and keep a firearm. And we're challenging this because at this point in time, there are many of those firearms that we believe the Constitution gives us the right to have been taken away from us, both right now as we are living, but some that they are going to confiscate from our families if we should pass. And again, like any heirloom, any item that you have, that is property of yours, you would like to be able to pass that along to family members or an estate or whatever it might be.
You mentioned a couple things there I want to come back to in just a second. But let me stick with the case here for a second. What is its current status? Where are we now with it?
Well, like any other lawsuit, we're in a limbo status of filing paperwork, the amicus briefs. A lot of this stuff doesn't require courtroom appearances for testimony. It's more paperwork filed by attorneys, and that's where we're at. At some point in time, it will go either to an appellate court judge, and we will decide what the next step is from there on in.
What do you think are the parts of the SAFE Act that are the best parts? What makes the most sense and what's the most reasonable to you?
The background checks, obviously, are a real good item in there. Certainly, there's no objection from anyone in law enforcement to doing everything that we possibly can. We devoted our lifetime, most of us, to keeping people safe. And if someone doesn't or shouldn't own a long gun or a handgun due to the criminal aspect or whether it be the mental health aspect, we're more than willing to look into that, to be part of that. We're not objecting to the cost of doing that even. We are certainly more than willing to try to protect people as best we can.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Oswego County Sheriff Rule Todd, and we're talking about the New York SAFE Act. One of the criticisms that I've heard frequently about this law is that it's not well matched to the main problems of gun violence in New York State. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. Do you see this as one of its fundamental flaws?
It certainly is. I mean, the majority of the crimes that are committed with handguns, long guns, weapons are illegal weapons. The weapons that we're talking about here are legally owned, registered weapons. Nobody has a problem with it. I think New York City said it was like in the 90-95% percentile of the shootings and the handguns, same way in Syracuse, are illegal weapons. What we're wrestling with here on this is the fact that there is nothing in the SAFE Act that covers illegal weapons. It's always coming back on the innocent person, the law-abiding person, that is not. We don't have any objection to the fact of the lacked handgun, the lacked gun part, if it is available to kids or to other people in your household. We have no objection to this. The 10 rounds, it used to be, it was 7. They've increased it. The 7 round. Why should a criminal have the availability of 14, 36, 50-round clips, and the people that want to protect their own self or their home from invasions, which we have had more and more home invasions, and a lot of it, obviously, is the drug trade and that type of stuff. But why should the innocent people always be outgunned or outmanned by the non-law-abiding sector of our society?
And The law obviously brings up big issues regarding enforcement and compliance. Some sheriffs have said, not you, but some sheriffs have said they're not going to enforce parts of the law, such as releasing the names of pistol permit holders who have not opted out already. What's your view on that particular approach?
Well, again, the issue then becomes if we release the names and addresses and what pistols and what weaponry I have at my house and you have at your house, when someone wants, I refer to it as on Thursday, Friday, and Sunday papers are full of ads to go shopping when you do your weekend shopping. If someone has an issue and wants an AK-47 or an AR-15 or a Tech-9 pistol, are they going to go to someone's house where they don't know if there's one, or are they going to go so they go through the shopping list that I call and say, let's see, who in our neighborhood has one of these weapons that I can get a good price for if I steal? I'm against putting a shopping list out there to, as I say, the bad element in our society that shouldn't be out there. I mean, why would you wouldn't put out that a shopping list that says your wife has a 2-carat diamond ring? Because in today's society and the way the economy is, there is someone that may want to take a chance. It's so easy now to tell. There's so much on Facebook with and Twitter and all these different accounts as to when you're home, when you're not home, where you're working, and all this other stuff. That why would we create a shopping list for weapons for the bad element of our society?
So let me make sure I understand you. Then are you're saying then that you're not going to release that, or are you saying that?
I'm not saying that at all because I don't control it. That is the county clerk's job. I just do the background checks. The county clerk does a registry here. There are some areas where the sheriff does it. There are some areas the clerk. Now, there is, and the Clerks Association has come out against it and says, and again, my understanding of the law is if you don't have that list, you don't have to prepare one. So, I mean, there are a lot of issues. If someone foils under the FOIL law, if that issue is not readily available, you don't have to produce it. And there is no county that I know of in the state that has such a list, and I don't believe that right now while we're waiting for the lawsuit that there are going to be any lists prepared any place in the state. But again, I can't speak for the clerks.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Oswego County Sheriff Rule Todd. We were talking about enforcement before, and there's a lot of discretion in law enforcement. It starts with what happens on the street, the decisions of cops and deputies as far as what they're going to arrest people for or what they might not pursue, on up to where an entire department decides it's going to place its efforts here as opposed to here. So how do you think that's going to play out in terms of this law? Are there certain areas that the law covers that are going to get, shall we say, less active attention by law enforcement personnel?
I would say that that would probably be correct, just as it is in every other law that there is on the books. When you go to the VNT law, the vehicle and traffic law, if you see somebody that's going 95 mile an hour down 481, it's probably going to get much more attention than the guy that has the taillight out at, say, midnight. The guy that's swerving all over the highway, where the guy that might be doing 70, the guy swerving all over the place is going to get more attention. Are there certain aspects? And again, you use the word discretion, and you're right. We do have the, when we pull somebody over for a VNT, we have the discretion to write them a ticket or give them a warning. And I think the law, if we didn't law didn't mean for us to use discretion, it wouldn't have allowed it. It would have said every time you pull somebody over, you write a ticket. Every time you arrest somebody, we have the discretion sometimes on a larceny, whether to charge them with a burglary or a larceny. There are all aspects of the law that have been put out there by the state and federal government that allows us, like you say, the discretion to make our own. Are we going to look and see what we feel is most important right now in a certain situation as to what we have to do? Certainly. That's law enforcement. We just don't have, There are so many town, village, city, county, state, and federal laws out there that we don't have time to really enforce and go out and research every single one of them and enforce them all.
And I was curious about the gun owner, the citizen aspect of this. What parts of the law would you anticipate are going to get the highest levels of non-compliance from otherwise law-abiding citizens?
The registry of the guns themselves. Right now, the state and federal government have no idea how many AR-15s are out there because they were not registered before. And if you were going to have it taken from you or your estate, and would you register it? And that's, I think that's one of the big things that a lot of your sportsmen want to be able to abide by the law. They don't want to be a lawbreaker. They have never done that in their whole life. But you're forcing some of these people to become a lawbreaker. And I don't have an AK-47. I don't have an AR-15. I just never had any interest in it. So it can't be said that I'm doing this because for that reason, I might have one pistol that I think would be, as they tell me, confiscated. Now, I just don't understand the rationale of confiscating. This is the United States, and our Constitution says we're a free country, and this is one of the big issues, that they have the right to confiscate any part of your house, your car, your possessions, if you haven't broken the law.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Oswego County Sheriff Rule Todd. You mentioned something at the outset about the number of pistol permit applications going through the roof, and I wanted to come back to that because there is another related issue for the success of this law, which is the ability of the localities and the state in processing all the paperwork that it's going to generate and doing the record keeping that it requires and then doing something with those, presumably doing something with those records. So do you think that the existing structure is up to the task that the law has in it?
Well, I have had to dedicate one of my one of the clerks in my office to almost doing nothing but pistol permit backgrounds because it has increased so much. We had a while ago an application from an 86-year-old lady who had, you know, never had one in her 86 years, but now this year she deemed it that she needed to get a pistol permit because the Constitution allowed her to when she was going to get one. And, you know, it's right from the time now that they become old enough to get a pistol permit that they're making out the applications. There's four references that we have to do the background checks and make sure that that their records are clean and whether they've answered the questions correctly. And everything else is just and down at the clerk's office, I know how much that has increased. I mean, they have stacks of them down there. And from there, they have to go to the judge. So you're talking three offices right here in Oswego County that have had their workload increased by five times. Now, you can't tell me that is not a cost effort to the county.
Well, this may be getting a bit into the weeds of the law, but one of the things that struck me as I read through it that I thought would be a real challenge is the provision that gun dealers and presumably somewhere in the state has to keep track of all this, their ability to deal with doing background checks for each purchase of ammunition, which my understanding is that's going to come into effect on January 1, 2014. So if I understand that correctly, someone going down to the local Dick's or Gander Mountain and getting a box of 50-22 long rifle cartridges, that's going to be a background check in addition to buying a gun. Is that correct? And how's that going to work logistically?
Well, again, it's going to fall under the Brady Bill part of it, of where when you went down there to buy a gun, you had to get a coupon. Now you're going to have to produce identification. You're going to have to do the check to see if you've been arrested or mental health for, to like you say, buy a box of 22. Have you seen the cost increase and what a box of 22s used to cost as compared to what it costs now? that's gone up about tenfold. I mean, and you can't get them. People are stockpiling ammunition right now just because they're afraid at some point. There's rumors out there that the government is buying it all up, you know. And I'll be honest with you, even before this, because of Afghanistan stuff, we were having trouble getting ammunition. We get it on state bid price. The government paid a good price for it because they always do. And to supply our soldiers, absolutely, they should have first choice. I mean, they absolutely should have. We were backlogged 2 years getting ammunition, and it's just as bad now, even though we've pulled back from Afghanistan and Iraq. It's just as hard to get ammunition. Why? Because people are hoarding it. So what have we gained? Now you're going to have this huge amount of ammunition in people's houses if they have a fire, if they have a break-in. And again, who's going to end up with it is going to be the bad element of society, not the people that would maybe go out and buy 100 rounds to 22 to go out and shoot at a tin can like they used to, or go to the range, skeet shooters, all this stuff. It's just the problems it's creating are all for the legitimate people that have a legitimate right to it. It's not interfering at all, I don't think, with the criminal element. Up until, you know, over the last, let me see, I picked this up the other day. I'm always picking up stuff. Last 20 years, gun homicide rate has gone down 49% in 20 years. That didn't happen, you know, 49% after the Safe Gun Act. It happened in the other 19 years before this. It has gone down 49%. Why are we penalizing the honest gun owners?
And you brought this up before, and your story about the inability to find ammunition now is another instance of it. But it is the question of unanticipated and unintended consequences of this. It does seem like one of the things that has happened on the ground in New York State since this has come into effect is a buying frenzy. First for the guns themselves, as I understand, based on what I've read, and now the ammunition. So as a law enforcement officer, does this not worry you? What we've done is, in part, at least in the short term, raise the number of guns that people have.
It absolutely has. And again, the issue now becomes you can go out of state and buy this ammunition that you can't buy here. So now the people in the gun stores that pay taxes and do business here in New York State, and there are certain gun companies that have refused to do business with New York State because of the new regulations. You can go out, say, to Ohio, and if you're out there, instead of buying locally, we're buying in Ohio and bringing it back. There's nothing that prohibits us from doing that. So who are we hurting? We're hurting our local economy. We're hurting our people that again, just want to abide by the law. None of these people that I know of want to instinctively go out and just break the law because this is a new law. I think they'd all be willing to work with the government if there were some changes that need to be made. And if those changes were made, I think you could do away with probably 90% or better of the opposition.
What's your sense of the long-term prospects of this law, assuming for the moment that it does not get overturned, that it is not found to be unconstitutional? Do you think in the long term people are just going to get used to it, or do you think it's going to be the sticking point for gun owners for years and years and years?
I think it's going to be a sticking point until it's changed somewhere. I thought that probably after the first 6 months that after this was brought out, it would start to die away. It's getting stronger. I'm getting more requests now to go and speak to people and to organizations. I see more and more signs than I did in the first 6 months. They're all over the state, from north of the Hudson, right on up here. They north of New York City, there's signs breaking out, companies, different signs, you know. And one of the ones that I see up north, Lattice, had enough yet. I mean, people, again, I think, understand if you that they're getting regulated more now as a free country than they are in a lot of countries that are not as per se free as we are.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
The title? I'd have to say, I guess it'd be about the twilight, you know, of my life. It's funny, a guy says to me, I was complaining about getting old the other day, and a guy looks at me, he says, well, don't worry about it, it doesn't last long. And I says, well, you know, now that you think about it, you're probably right. I have a few more years. I think I'd like to be sheriff, and then I'll probably retire. It's been a great career. It's been a great life, and I'd have to say that after 40-some years in law enforcement, I'm probably in my twilight. It's not quite dark yet, but it's getting there.
Second, what's your worst trait?
I have probably I speak my mind more than where I could sometimes keep quiet, not get involved in something. I do tend to speak my mind and stick up for the underdog. I always root for the underdog, you know, other than unless it's the Yankees. But the rest of the time, I'm pretty much with the underdog.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Being able to be, again, not just elected once, but the four times that I have been elected sheriff in my professional career, the promotions that I went through almost every office in the department. It's a career that I set out to be, and it's just, to me, it's been everything I ever wanted it to be, and to be able to do, there's very few people, I think, that could sit back and say, if I had to live my life over again, I would do it again, and I would in a heartbeat.
That was Oswego County Sheriff Rule Todd. Sheriff Todd, thanks for talking with me.
Not a problem. I enjoy this.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, conversations in the public interest. You can now follow us on Twitter at Campbell Convos. As you've just heard, the SAFE Act that was passed by the legislature continues to generate controversy. There's an issue that New Yorkers themselves must decide on November 5th, however, which is also generating controversy. That's the referendum to expand casino gambling in the state. The Campbell Public Affairs Institute recently sponsored a public debate on this referendum, with experts arguing both for and against it. And you can find the audio from that debate on WRVO.org. I encourage you to take a listen.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein, Eric Lyons, and Alexandra Curtis. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.